coming to you from Jerez, Monterey Bay, and other locations. And Mr. Wesley Smith, are you with us?
I am here. How are you?
Oh, good. Hi. I'm fine. How about you?
Well, thank you. We had an earthquake up here, though.
Really? An earthquake?
Good heavens. Yeah, I live in Oakland, and we just had about a 4.0 about an hour ago.
Good heavens. I mean, they're throwing thunderbolts. What's next?
If you live in California, you go through earthquakes.
Well, that's true. Do you think there was any serious damage? Or
no.
Was it?
No, it was just under that, so we're okay.
Well, that's good. I guess hopefully no aftershocks and no other problems.
I'll let you know.
Yeah, well, if you
hear me scream and run out of the room.
If we hear a large rumble, we'll send the troops or something. Well, I'm going to let you introduce yourself to a pretty large extent because you know more about you than I know at this moment, but tell us a little bit where you're coming from and what you have on your mind tonight.
Well, I'm an author and an attorney, and I've been working against euthanasia-assisted suicide, some of the problems with bioethics,
right,
and cloning, human cloning, since 1993 approximately. I assume that we're going to talk about the Terry Schiavo case,
okay,
in Florida, which is a horrendous situation in which a young woman who's 39 would turn 40 in December, but may not be allowed to do that because a judge has ordered that she be dehydrated to death.
Good heavens. Instigation.
The reason she's going to be dehydrated to death isn't because she's a criminal, which, of course, we wouldn't do to a criminal. We wouldn't do it to an animal. If you do it to a horse, you'd probably go to jail. But the reason that a judge has ordered her dehydrated to death is that she has a serious cognitive disability. She collapsed in 1990 and ended up in a situation where she has some very serious impairments. She's not unconscious, although a judge has ruled her so, and any of your listeners who have a computer can go on the internet to terriesfight.org, which I've just done on my computer.
Terriesfight.org,
T-E-R-R-I-S, fight.org. And you will see a picture when you get there of Terry Schiavo, the woman in question, smiling at her mother, clearly conscious. And that's taken from a video, which you can see within this site, of Terry's mother coming and saying, "Hi, sweetie, how are you?" And Terry looks up and sees her mom and smiles broadly and is so happy to see her mother. Yet a judge says she's unconscious and therefore can be dehydrated to death. The reason the judge has made this order is that he was asked to by Terry's husband, Michael. Now, what's really remarkable about this is that Michael, after Terry collapsed, brought a malpractice lawsuit, medical malpractice lawsuit. I'm not sure what the medical malpractice was, but he told a jury that, in fact, he brought a rehabilitation expert to the jury, and the rehabilitation expert testified that at Michael's request, he put together this plan to give Terry the best of medical treatment so that she could get better and to see how she could improve.
Right.
As a consequence of that and other testimony, I'm sure, the jury awarded a $1.3 million verdict for medical malpractice. $750,000 of this went into a trust account for Terry to pay for those kinds of medical services that Michael said he promised he was going to provide for his wife. He
right.
promised he'd stick with her and stick to his marriage vows. He promised that he would care for her and that if he did properly, she would expect to live a normal life expectancy. Well, then the money got in the bank, and suddenly everything changed. He has never provided one day, not one hour, not one minute of the therapy and rehabilitation that he said to the jury he would.
Good heavens.
He has, within 3 months of getting the money in the bank, he ordered a do not resuscitate order on Terry's chart so that if she had a cardiac arrest, she would not be resuscitated. He has refused other forms of medical treatment, such as antibiotics to treat an infection. He has done his best to make sure that her stimulation, which people with serious head injuries need, has been limited. Not only that, but in 1998, Michael then petitioned the court because Terry didn't die. He petitioned the court to take away her tube-supplied food and water. The only life support Terry is on is a feeding tube, even though she can swallow. That's what I'm told, anyway. A feeding tube would keep her from aspirating, but perhaps she can't swallow. I'm not sure. But that's only the only, quote, life support she's on. She's not on, you know, high-tech machines. She's not on kidney dialysis. And so in 1998, he petitioned the court to have her food and water taken away so that she would dehydrate to death. Now, what's really notable about that is Michael Schiavo is engaged to be married. He not only that, he lives with his fiancée. Not only that, he's had one child by his fiancée, and his fiancée is expecting another baby shortly. Not only that, but if Terry dies, Michael Schiavo inherits what it may be left of the $750,000. Much of it, I understand, is gone now because he's paid lawyers with that money to help make his wife dead. That was money that was supposed to go to rehabilitate her. Instead, is going to pay for lawyers to help make her dead. And what's even the most remarkable thing is that a Judge Greer in the Sixth Circuit of Florida, it's in the Clearwater area, has said that this is fine and dandy and that Michael is the one who should make this decision, even though Terry's father and mother and brother and sister have said, no, don't do this to Terry. We'll take care of her. We'll provide for her. We'll, you know, make sure she gets the proper treatment. And, nope, sorry, can't do that. And so on September 11th, Judge Greer has set a hearing, and that is the day he will order that Terry's food and water, the date upon which Terry's food and water should be stopped.
Good grief. So that's another date for September 11th.
Yes, very ironic.
Local
date.
Terrorism.
27,000 people have contacted Governor Jeb Bush, which is a remarkable outpouring of support for the Schiavo family. And by the way, Bob Schindler, who is Terry Schiavo's father, has spent every dime he has trying to save his daughter's life.
Wow.
And indeed has spent his retirement money. I've met Bob. He's in his, late 60s or maybe mid-60s. And, you know, the money he had set aside for his golden years is gone because he's had to pay for the lawyers out of his own pocket. The lawyers are owed a great deal of money, and they're working basically, you know, knowing they're never going to really get paid. There is a defense fund if people want to contribute.
That would be helpful, sure.
Yes, and that you can access by going to that terriesfight.org. And it's just remarkable how much outpouring there has been. The mainstream media has not picked up on this story much at all, but the conservative media has been all over it, and it has had an impact, so much so that Jeb Bush, a few days ago, wrote a letter to the judge requesting the judge to appoint a guardian ad litem.
Excellent.
What's interesting, a guardian ad litem is somebody who is supposed to take the interest and welfare of the incapacitated person at heart. There has been a guardian ad litem in this case for Terry Schiavo. That guardian ad litem recommended to Judge Greer that she not be dehydrated, and he ignored the recommendation. Accordingly, one would expect that a mere letter from Governor Bush would not do much, and indeed, Judge Greer announced that, yes, he's read the letter, I respect Governor Bush, and I'm throwing it in the round file. He didn't use the term round, but that's what he meant.
Right.
So the only, in fact, tomorrow I will have an article on National Review Online for your folks listening who are on the internet.
Good. Let's give that reference. National Review Online.
National Review Online, right? And I think it's nationalreview.com is how you get there.
Nationalreview.com.
And I am urging people to contact Jeb Bush, and I have a phone number and an email address that I can give.
Yes, why don't we do that? Let's start giving it now.
And urging that he not just write a letter, because that's inadequate to the task. That's not a formal kind of entry into the case.
Uh-huh.
But that he investigate every possibility to have the state of Florida actually intervene formally into this case and seek to have the state of Florida named guardian, so we can get a professional guardian into this thing and straighten out, number one, is she or is she not unconscious? Because under Florida law, you have to be what's called persistent vegetative state to be dehydrated to death, but if you see these videos I've addressed, and I've only discussed one or two of them, there are others, she's clearly responsive. I mean, she's reacting to her environment. If you react to your environment, by definition, you're not unconscious. So there's something really wrong there.
Yes.
Secondly, why this husband has been allowed to have anything to do with the control of the care of his wife. He's somebody who wants her dead, and he has a financial incentive potential and a personal incentive to make her dead. Now, I don't understand how a person like that can be the guardian. And how
it sounds like judicially assisted murder.
I don't see how a trial judge can countenance. I mean, if I'm an attorney, and I can tell you that in California, if a conservator had a financial conflict of interest in a financial transaction, such as he could benefit or she could benefit from the financial transaction being done for the conservatee, or you might call the ward, you can't do it.
Right.
So why in the world, when you're not talking about a money transaction, you're talking about somebody dying,
right?
Are we allowing A, Michael Schiavo to be the decision maker here, and B, a judge to allow that to continue to happen? And by the way, it's been on appeal, and the Court of Appeals in Florida said, too bad, we're with the Judge Greer, and the Supreme Court of Florida didn't take the case, refused to take the case. The only hope that I see is Jeb Bush stepping in and trying to wrest control of this helpless citizen of the state of Florida from the husband and from a judge who is clearly making a wrong decision, and get some a professional guardian in there and try to see if we can sort things through. And if people would like to email Governor Bush, they can do that either through the Terry. There's a phone number that the Terry Schiavo, terrysfight.org has, and I believe also an email that you can link through that website, but I'll give it also.
Yeah, let's give it on the air.
Yeah, so it's FL, as for Florida, FL, then the underline, then an underline, and then governor, G-O-V-E-R-N-O-R, for governor, at E-O-G, E-O-G, dot
at
state,
E-O-G,
dot state, dot FL, for Florida, .us. So FL underline governor at eog.state.fl.us. And say that, you know, we appreciate the letter, Governor Bush, that you wrote in this case, but that's not sufficient. The state has to intervene formally in the case. The key word is intervene formally in the case. And we expect you, as a caring man, as a God-fearing man, as a man who has previously set forth your belief in the sanctity of human life, to at least try to do what you can to save the life of a helpless Florida citizen. And the fax number is 850-487-2564. And I'll say that again, 850-487-2564, if you want to fax him a note asking him to intervene formally in this case. And the phone number, if you want to leave a phone message, is 850-487-1963. The governor responded to 27,000 emails and wrote that letter, and that's not easy for a governor to do, because a governor tends to, with proper cause, not to want to get involved in judicial cases. That's generally not what a governor is supposed to do.
Right.
This is an extraordinary case, and I think it does require extraordinary action on the part of Governor Bush.
Well, it would appear that if a governor could intervene to commute a sentence, to do things of that type, in the case of someone who is a criminal, they could do something.
It's actually more complicated because,
yes.
Because and when the criminal, for example, is somebody who's being executed, the governor is given by law the power to commute the sentence. That's part
right.
of a check and balance we have in our criminal justice system. In this situation, it's less clear, because you have a judge saying that this is a legal act that a guardian can take, and so it may be a little more difficult and a little more complicated, but I trust that when the facts of this case get before, you know, maybe another judge or before a, you know, the Department of Public Social Services, the people and the agency responsible for making sure that dependent people are not abused, just because a judge is saying this is okay doesn't make it okay. But it will make it more complicated, but he must at least try. There's no
right.
guarantee he can succeed, but he must at least try, it seems to me.
Is there any any possibility that people also ought to direct something to the president?
This would be, you know, the president, I suppose
probably
he could.
Doesn't exactly have standing, but he's got a brother.
That's the problem. I don't think the president has, would be the person to do something, or General Ashcroft. One thing is happening. There is an attempt on the part of the attorney for the father to bring a federal case here to allege a civil rights violation, which I think is a proper approach, because you're taking a woman and you're taking away her right to life because she's disabled.
Right.
And, you know, that should not be allowed, particularly considering that this judge has not followed the law. She's not unconscious. You can see it. Anybody can see it if they want to see it. And given the idea that her husband has so many conflicts of interest. In fact, an affidavit filed by, in this federal case just the other day that I've read, a nurse who cared for Terry in a nursing home back in the mid-90s, said that Michael used to come in and say things like, when is she going to die? Isn't she dead yet? Calling her names and things like this. I mean, this is a horrendous situation that is beyond the pale, particularly since an expert physician, as I write about in my National Review Online column that I believe will be in tomorrow, who is a Nobel Prize nominee, has testified that she's not unconscious and that he believes he can help her.
Excellent. Wow.
But the judge won't let it happen.
No.
You know, so this judge is saying, no, we're not going to try this treatment. I mean, why not give the benefit of the doubt to life? You can always dehydrate her to death. Why not give her the kind of therapy that this doctor, who's a world-renowned doctor, says he believes can help improve Terry's condition? What is hurt? What is lost by giving that a try?
I could not see anything except that evidently the husband would be.
Well, the husband can't get married. It gives the whole new meaning to the term "till death do us part," doesn't it?
Oh yeah, and until we part a little death there. That's
what's under my craw.
Wow. Well, I can't say as I blame you. I had not heard of the case, so it probably is not getting the kind of media attention it should be. But if we can help bring it out.
Jane Chastain had a really good article today on it in WorldNet Daily.
Oh, excellent.
For your WorldNet Daily fans.
I'm a Jane Chastain fan, too, as a matter of fact.
I was on her show today, and she's having a fit, as she should, about this case.
Surely.
Yeah.
Well, that's an urgent case. And
it's very urgent. And people, you know, we often say, oh, well, what can I do? The world's going into terrible places. Oh, whoa, whoa, whoa. Here's something where people can actually get involved. You know what would happen if 100,000 emails went to Jeb Bush?
Well,
faxes and phone calls?
I can imagine.
I think
people are listening to us tonight, they could well get on a phone to a friend, a relative, a couple of like-minded people.
And have the whole nation rise up and say, do not kill this woman. Do not end her life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, where it can focus on one individual and the case is clear. I mean, even if she were in a persistent vegetative state, I would think that would be an appalling thing.
No, exactly.
To do,
it's legal in this country because we've decided that food and water supplied through a tube, thanks to the bioethics movement, should be deemed medical treatment as if it were a respirator.
And so you end
up in these kinds of situations.
All right. Well, we must take a little break. If you'll hold with us, we'll be back after a short break. Pelvis Radio Liberty microphone, and we'll be back. Yes, and I think this is a break where perhaps we just continue after that short interlude. What do you think, besides the emails and so forth, is there anything else that people could do about this case?
Well, I think that, as you pointed out, people need to tell their friends about it. They need to start making copies of the articles that are beginning to come out. Jane Chastain's article today is a prime case.
WorldNetDaily.com.
WorldNetDaily.com.
My piece, .net.
My piece tomorrow in National Review. Tell your friends about it and get them to to contact the governor.
Right.
And you know, it wouldn't hurt to contact the judge. I don't put his address down because it's really not going to have an impact, but it would be nice for him to know that people are watching. But I think the most important thing to do is contact Governor Jeb Bush.
Right.
Also, people should take a look at whether they've talked to their friends and loved ones, people, in case they become incapacitated, as to what is to be done. And a lot of people are worried about signing advance directives because they feel that the advance directives basically mean that they're not going to treat you, and there are some advance directives like that. But there are other advance directives that actually would provide that you would not be treated in the way that Terry's being treated. You see, Terry had made no written statement, and she was only 27 when she collapsed, so it's certainly understandable.
Right.
She left no written instructions. And so what's happening is that the husband, by the way, here's another part, the husband testified that his wife said she wouldn't want to live in this condition. But he didn't bring that up during the medical malpractice case.
No.
He only brought it up when he decided to take away her food and water.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know, it's clearly a case of his interest in the devil take the hindmost, which hopefully will be him. But that's a rather grim testimony. What can people do then? Let's say they're thinking about this kind of case. Who can they choose? What kind of directive can they leave?
There are some advanced directives that are good in this regard. Some I've heard that are good that I haven't reviewed, and one that I have myself, which is put out by a group that I work with. It's called the International Task Force on Euthanasia and Assisted Suicide. They call it the Protective Medical Decision Document, the PMDD.
And PMDD.
PMDD, Protective Medical Decision Document. And what it is you appoint and it's state specific. So I live in California, so it's right for California. The one that I signed is I appointed my wife as my decision maker in the event that I'm incapacitated, and then I appointed an alternate decision maker. I basically said that I did not want action taken to intentionally end my life, while at the same time I set forth my desires. In terms of medical treatment, if and when I might want it to stop. For example, I'm a believer in hospice. If I was dying, I would not want to be killed, but I wouldn't want to be kept alive for every possible moment. I would want to have if I was in pain, I'd want that controlled. I'd want my symptoms controlled. I'd want the social services and other kinds of benefits that hospice have available, not only for me, but for my wife. And I've been a hospice volunteer, and I've seen how this works. So the PMDD allows people to make those kinds of decisions, but basically says, look, don't take action to try to kill me here, including taking away my food and water if it's medically indicated. There are occasions when people are actively dying, when the body cannot assimilate food and water, where you shouldn't give it because you're not doing anything that is good for the patient. But that's not what we're talking about, certainly in the Terry Schiavo case.
Right.
And the PMDD, if people are interested, is available at the internet. We're going to give out a lot of numbers here, but
right.
internationaltaskforce.org, internationaltaskforce.org. And the Right to Life people in Washington have something called a life will that I have not had a chance to review, so I can't say one way or the other, but I have a feeling they'd be on the right side of this issue.
Okay. So people can pick some action.
Yeah, there are some things that people can do, and they should. Look, don't sign one of, you know, when you go into a hospital, they're going to put an advance directive under your nose and ask you to sign it because the government tells them they have to. That's not the time to sign these things, and those things are often forms. So if you said, well, in a certain situation, I wouldn't want medical treatment, you may be thinking hooked up to high-tech machines, but that also includes food and water. If it's supplied through a tube, it can include antibiotics or fever reduction. So you have to be very careful. And people can go to their lawyer and have these things drawn up. But lawyers will tend to, because many of the forms say no food and water. In fact, I sent my mother to my former law partner to have one of these drawn up. And then I reviewed it. And my law partner had put in there she didn't want food and water. And I said, Mom, are you saying you'd want to be dehydrated to death if you were in a serious cognitive incapacity? And she said, absolutely not. I just don't want the machines. I said, well, that's not what this says. And so we got that fixed.
Right.
So people have to be careful what they sign and tell the lawyer if they don't want food and water under the law, they have a right not to have it. But if they don't want to be dehydrated to death, which takes 10 to 14 days to die, then they should tell the lawyer to put that in there.
Well, that's important to know. And California has provisions whereby these kinds of directives will be followed.
Yeah.
What happens if somebody goes into a hospital and has not done anything about this? Is there an automatic process like with wills where they pick the next person they think like
that? That's a good question. Usually what will happen is, for example, if I went in and I didn't have one of these, they'd have my wife. But what if my wife and my mother decided to have a conflict about this? Then at some point there'd have to be a conservatorship created, and then the judge decide who should have the say, and there's a priority in the law here in California that the spouse would be first, the parent second, this kind of thing. There is something coming down that you need to know about, and your listeners do also, that impacts on this, and it's called futile care theory, F-U-T-I-L-E. And in futile care theory, and this is coming to California because I've read the bioethical journals about it, if a doctor decides that he believes or she believes that the quality of your life is not worth living, and you or your family want medical treatment, under futile care theory, they have the right to say no. Now, think about this for a second.
Wow.
People used to worry about being hooked up to machines against their will. And that was a legitimate worry because that sometimes happened, where people wanted to go home and just die in their own bed with their families, and doctors were saying, no, you got to be hooked up to these machines. Well, that's no longer as much of a problem as it was, if it's a problem at all anymore, because the economics of medicine, they don't want you to have the machines.
Right.
But now what bioethicists are trying to foist upon us is that it's the opposite of this. If you want medical treatment, and it may be high-tech machines, it may be food and water, it may be antibiotics, and they don't think the quality of your life is worth living, then they have the right to say no. And there was a survey of hospitals in this state. 24 out of 26 hospitals were surveyed by the Cambridge Quarterly of Healthcare Ethics. And they found that out of the 26 hospitals they surveyed, 24 had these futile care protocols. And of the 24, all but 7, that means, if I did my math right, 17 of the 24 hospitals that had these protocols gave the final decision over whether you and I receive medical treatment if a doctor doesn't think our lives are worth living or worth paying for, I might add, to somebody other than the patient or the family. In other words, if you want to die, choice, and you want to refuse medical treatment, which I support. If you don't want chemo, you don't have to have chemo, you know?
Yes.
Then we care about choice. But if you want treatment that they don't want to give you, then suddenly choice doesn't matter. And the issue really is that certain people should be dead because we're moving away from the sanctity of life ethic in healthcare. We're moving away from Hippocratic medicine to a quality of life healthcare, which endangers our elderly, our weak and vulnerable disabled, and our dying.
That doesn't leave much room for first do no harm, does it?
Well, those 13% of doctors now take the Hippocratic Oath.
That is horrifying. All right, this is Radio Liberty. You can reach out to Stan's organization at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Right. If you would like to reach Dr. Stan's organization, get some of his tapes or books or any other kinds of things, or even Phonixopoly, you can do so at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And meanwhile, we've been talking with Wesley Smith about the really rather awful case in Florida. What do you think will happen in that case if you had to take your best shot? I mean, let's say we generate a bunch of emails and so forth. Is there a route to go for?
Well, I don't know. I frankly have been following this case now for goodness, I'd say at least 3 years, 4 years. And I'll be honest with you, I didn't think that they'd be able to keep her alive this long, because I know what's happening. in the courts, but I can say this, that Terry's father is dedicated and her mother is dedicated, and they're giving everything they have to saving their daughter's life. And I've spoken with the attorney who's helping them, a woman named Pat Anderson, and this last weekend when she was bringing the federal case, and Terry had a medical emergency, and apparently Michael had refused to allow her to be admitted to a hospital. Pat Anderson was up for 36 straight hours trying to help Terry Schiavo. So there are heroes in this situation. There are people who are giving every ounce that they have for this young woman, this helpless citizen, this helpless sister, for her life. So sometimes in my work, because I follow a lot of these issues beyond what we're talking about, way beyond what we're talking about right now, one tends to get a little pessimistic and a little cynical. But we shouldn't, because, you know, we have tremendous victories as well. For example, in assisted suicide, at one time it looked like Jack Kevorkian was unstoppable, and now he's doing 10 to 20 years.
That's true.
So we have victories, and so I'm going to, I've been wrong on this case quite a bit, so I'm going to be optimistic. If people will get involved, urge Jeb Bush to try to intervene formally into the lawsuit, not just a letter, and see what happens in the federal case, who knows?
Well, at least one should make that effort.
Sure, because you know what?
The
worst thing that happens is you lose, and the only thing that's happened is you've tried to do the right thing by a helpless woman. But if you sit around and do nothing, and then she dies, maybe something would have been different had you acted.
That's right. In some manner, you become complicit in the action that happens then. I think it's rather interesting that her parents are named Schindler.
Yes,
and this is the Schindler's List of One.
That too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way,
got to get hold of Spielberg.
And Terry is a devout Catholic, and this withholding of her food and water violates Catholic moral teaching in her situation.
Right.
Which is another. It's her religious rights, it seems to me, are being violated here.
That would appear to be a pretty interesting argument.
Yeah.
Well, it would. How about the federal case? Is it being filed? When you
it
were
has been
about?
Filed. The judge, the first attempt, the judge said no can do, but he was concerned enough that he gave Pat Anderson 10 days to try to come up with a good theory to make a federal case out of it. And so Pat Anderson is literally cracking the books continually, trying to find just the right theory, and there are a lot of people who are donating their time to that effort as well.
That would be good if there are attorneys or other people
right.
who
there are people who are donating their time to help, because you know one attorney in a small firm can't handle it all. Plus, she's got her other clients to care for too, you know, and she has to earn a living because she's certainly not making any money off this case,
right?
Because so much is going on. I'm sure she's been paid some, but. You know, I'm sure she's owed money she'll never receive.
I'm sure. Well, people might be able to contribute.
I hope so. And as I said, there is a, on the terriesfight.org, there is a way to contribute, and I believe it is tax deductible.
That would be good. People could go to terriesfight.org. If people do not have internet access, is there an 800 number or anything of that description?
You know what? Let me find that out, because we get so used to everybody being online.
Pretty much everybody is. Well,
a lot of
not
people
everybody
are.
Is, but
you know,
a lot of many people are.
My mother, who's 86, has learned to do email, but that's about the extent of it.
Right.
I'm on Terry Schiavo Foundation, which is what this was, and I'm clicking to enter. And there are a lot of things in here, and I'm assuming there's going to be a phone number. It says here... how you can help, letters from the family, download, sorry to be current news, what do we have, contact the family, let's try that.
Right, it doesn't have to be 800.
There are some emails, numbers, and I have an address, but I don't have a phone number. Let me give the address of the Terry Schindler Schiavo Foundation.
Okay.
And if anybody, Bob Schindler, I haven't talked to Bob in 2 years, I've emailed with him, but I have not been asked to do this, but if people want to send a check to the foundation to help pay for the defense, it's the Terry Schindler, S-C-H-I-N-D-L-E-R, Schiavo, S-C-H-I-A-V-O Foundation. The address is 4615 Gulf, G-U-L-F, Boulevard, number 104-103. That's 4615 Gulf Boulevard, number 104-103 in St. Petersburg, Florida, 33707. That's 4615 Gulf Boulevard, number 104-103, St. Petersburg Beach, Florida, 33707.
St. Petersburg Beach, with a third word beach in that?
Yeah, okay. Florida, 33707.
33707. Well, if somebody has a few spare dollars or a bunch of them hanging around, it could go to a worse place than to...
That's right, and it's, and my understanding is it's tax deductible. I've actually, I know it is because I've donated and it is tax deductible.
Excellent. So, well, people can do that. They can email and telephone, telegraph, et cetera. Jeb Bush, let's give a couple of those numbers again, just in case people were not with us earlier or they need it repeated.
All right, let me get to it. I've got all this on my computer. Here we are. Governor Jeb Bush, Florida Capitol Building, PL-05. So that's Governor Jeb Bush, Florida Capitol Building, PL-05. Tallahassee, T-A-L-L-A-H-A-S-S-E-E, Florida, 32399. So Governor Jeb Bush, Florida Capitol Building, PL-05, Tallahassee, Florida, 32399. The fax number is 850-487-2564. And if anybody's listening to the radio and they've got a fax at home, type a very courteous note, say, Dear Governor Bush, heard about the Terry Schiavo case. I know you care about it. You've written a letter. Thank you for that. But that's not enough. Please intervene formally and legally into this case and have, if possible, Florida become Terry's guardian. And then just send it off to fax it to 850-487-2564 or email him at fl_governor@eog.state.fl.us.
Okay. Leslie, could you tell our listeners a little bit about your book, Final Exit?
Forced Exit. Yes. Hi, Dr. Monteith.
Yes. Hi, Dr. Monteith.
I hope you feel better soon.
I hope so too.
My book, Forced Exit, is subtitled "The Slippery Slope from Assisted Suicide to Legalized Murder." It's a book I first wrote in 1997, and I have updated it and revised it so that it's current. Up to basically the Schiavo case. I mention it. I don't go into the details in the book I have just on the radio, but I do about in more detail about other cases such as this, such as the Robert Wendland case, which occurred here in California, where a hospital ethics committee said that a man who could roll a hospital wheelchair down a corridor should be dehydrated to death, and that went to the California Supreme Court. And the Michael Martin case in Michigan, I talk about the futile care cases. I talk about assisted suicide in Oregon. I write about what's happened in the Netherlands with euthanasia, where they're now killing babies born with birth defects. This is what German doctors did during World War II, and they were hanged at Nuremberg for it.
Right.
And that is now legal. Eugenic infanticide is now legal in the Netherlands, and about 90 babies a year, according to a study in the British medical journal Lancet, are killed by Dutch doctors because they're born with disabilities. And
it's really horrifying.
It is. It's terrible. And the book covers advanced directives. It covers how to get good pain control and things of that sort. It covers hospice and what's going on in Oregon with the assisted suicide up there, assisted suicide law.
Right.
The book sells for $18. But the publisher is doing something I've written 11 books now, and I've never seen a publisher do this, and I think it's a great idea. They're offering the same discount to listeners to your show that they would normally offer to the big bookstores like B. Dalton. It's 50% off. The book sells for $18, so your listeners can get it for $9, plus, I guess, a minor shipping and handling fee, if they call Spence Publishing at 888-773-6782. That's toll free. I don't know if they're open at night for this, but 888 773-6782. And the website for that is Spence Publishing, S-P-E-N-C-E, publishing.com. And if you mention that I was on the show and you heard me, they'll give you the 50% off.
Well, that's excellent. I'm sure people can call in the morning, if not now. It's
right.
888-773-6782.
The reason I wrote the book is forewarned is forearmed. You know, when
right.
a lot of people hear about this feudal care theory, it's when they're in the middle of a medical crisis, and that's when you're least able to defend yourself. The key is to be ready. I'm not saying don't trust doctors, because the only reason why medicine is still moral in this country is because of doctors and nurses who are continuing to resist some of these trends. But you ought to be ready and understand that this can happen and be prepared if necessary, and I'm not saying it would necessarily happen, but it could. In fact, let me tell you a story about that.
Sure.
I have a very good friend, you'd be surprised to hear. but I've taught, they know that what I do for a living.
Right.
And what I do with my life. And, of course, sometimes people raise their eyebrows because they don't necessarily believe everything that I'm saying because it sounds so awful.
Right.
So one day I get a call from this woman, and it had happened to her father.
Oh, Lord.
Her father had had a collapse. He'd become cognitively disabled. And when he went into that situation, the hospital that was caring for him beautifully suddenly stopped doing that. And when he had an emergency situation, they wouldn't take care of him. She finally threatened to call the police.
Goodness.
To make sure that he received the proper treatment, and he died. And I write about that in a different book called Culture of Death that I wrote, which, by the way, won the best health book of the year in 2001. And then there are other cases like that. I was on a radio show, and she wouldn't mind me using her name sheet because she wrote about it on WorldNet Daily, a woman named Barbara Simpson, who has a weekend radio show on KSFO up in San Francisco. And I was talking about feudal care theory. And 2 weeks later, I got a desperate call from her. Her father was in health difficulties in Arizona, and they did to him exactly what I warned against. And she wrote a column. If you go into the WorldNet Daily website and go to the Barbara Simpson archives, you'll be able to find it. And her father died. And she is very unhappy and very upset about that, and warning people now that some of our most weak and vulnerable senior citizens and cognitively disabled people and mentally retarded people and things like that are in danger in some places because, as I think a lot of this has to do with cost-cutting,
yes,
that there is a ad hoc healthcare rationing going on, which is a polite word for medical discrimination against elderly people, disabled people, and dying people, and chronically ill people. And healthcare rationing says that we will deny health care, in the name of spreading health care to everybody, we will deny it to the people who need it the most, which makes utterly no sense.
No, as a matter of fact, that's exactly what some things like Medicare and whatnot are supposed to enable.
Well, you've got two
enable.
Things. I think you've got two things happening. One, you've got bioethics. Not every bioethicist, but the primary thinking in the movement, which has done away with sanctity of human life, equality of human life, and created a quality of life, a subjective view of who has better worth than other people. And then that fits hand in glove with the cost-cutting economic incentives of managed care and HMOs, because the people who tend to be the most expensive just happen to be the ones who are targeted for these agendas. And
right.
So, and then also when you get to the government payments, Medicare is paid under the diagnosis-related group if you go to a hospital. And that means that the government has done a study, and let's say you have pneumonia and you're hospitalized for pneumonia and you're on Medicare. The government has done a study and figured out what the average stay for a pneumonia patient is in a hospital. And then they've paid the hospital a lump sum payment based on that average stay, and that lump sum payment now is probably too low to make that hospital any money. So
right.
The hospital's incentive is to get you out as soon as they possibly can. They're not supposed to, but our values follow our pocketbooks. That's human nature.
So they get a lump sum whether you recover
right.
quickly,
so,
slowly,
that's
or
right.
otherwise.
That's right. Let's say the average stay for pneumonia, and I'm just picking a number out of the air here, is 5 days. Mm-hmm. And they get a lump sum payment for 5 days worth of care. If they get you out in 2 days, they make some bucks.
Right.
If they get you out in 5 days, they might break even. If it takes 8 days to get you out, they lose their shirt.
Right.
So these very agendas that I was just describing come into play also with some of these government payments. So whether you're in the private sector or the public sector, you've got some of these same financial agendas going on. Now, if we practice medicine under the Hippocratic method, in which the sanctity of life was understood and accepted, then these economics, we'd have to overcome them. They're difficult. We have to work on that. But you wouldn't be endangering vulnerable patients.
At least,
unfortunately, that's not what's happening.
One could take out some kind of private insurance, and you know, they could work it out with actuarial tables and whatnot, but you could get the kind of coverage that you were able
We have to find ways to grant people better access to health care. But when people have access, they shouldn't be cut off. And it isn't up to doctors to decide whether treatment is provided. That should be up to families. And it certainly, in the Schiavo case, should not be up to a husband who has every possible reason to want his wife dead. He shouldn't be the one with the power to make that decision.
No.
And we should always give the benefit of doubt to life. Why?
Absolutely.
What is the rush to make this Terry Schiavo die?
Yeah, what is the downside?
If she's unconscious, which she's not suffering, and she clearly loves her family. You can see it in the videotapes. Her family wants to take care of her. If he wants to move on with his life, vaya con Dios, you know, move on with your life.
Sure.
And get a divorce. But don't cause your wife to be dead.
No, that's really a horrendous motivation. I mean, she might as well be Lacey Peterson at that rate. But,
well, we just have to care. You know what? We just have to care.
Right. Where do you think, I mean, I hear an underlying tone in this that perhaps some of this is coming out of the genetics movement. From just costs and things, where is this
all
coming
of this
from?
Is connected. There's a big circle. Let me talk a little bit about, as they say, my journey. I don't like that term. But I was doing a lot of consumer advocacy work.
Uh-huh.
When I had a friend kill herself under the influence of Hemlock Society literature on her 76th birthday. That made me realize that there was this euthanasia-assisted suicide movement that had a obsession with controlling death through suicide, which, of course, is not to control death, it's to surrender to it.
Right.
And so I started advocating against euthanasia and assisted suicide. I got involved with the International Task Force on Euthanasia and Assisted Suicide, the group I talked about earlier who have the protective medical decision document.
Right.
And then I realized as I did this work, I'm an author. I've been an author since 1987. I'm an international public speaker. In fact, I just got back from South Africa speaking there on euthanasia. I realized that assisted suicide and euthanasia were just the tip of the iceberg, that there was this bioethics movement that was doing away with Hippocratic medicine, doing away with sanctity of life, and that while not every bioethicist believes that, for example, Leon Kass, who is the head of the President's Council on Bioethics, doesn't believe that, but the bioethics movement in general were furious with President Bush when he appointed Kass because Kass is not typical of the bioethics movement.
Right.
So I wrote Forced Exit about assisted suicide, which we've discussed. That led to me looking at bioethics, which led me to write Culture of Death, The Assault on Medical Ethics in America.
By the way, where can people find that?
That's available in bookstores and on Amazon.com. It's a different publisher than the one who's done the revised Forced Exit.
Okay.
But Amazon.com has it in paperback or hardcover at discount. That led me to see what's going on with human cloning. And so now my book I'm currently writing, and I'm 3 months behind already. My manuscript was due in June.
Uh-oh.
Hope my publisher's not listening.
As a writer, I've thrown them together.
Yeah, I'm in the middle of writing a book called A Consumer's Guide to Brave New World, which will talk about human cloning, stem cell research, and that kind of thing. And hopefully, assuming I finish it, that'll be out sometime next year or maybe in early 2005. And I've just agreed to write a book against animal liberation, and the Peter Singer, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals kinds of attitudes, because they are trying to turn humans into just another animal in the forest.
Right.
And it would cause tremendous human suffering if we were not able to properly and humanely use animals. So I'll be writing a book about that as well. So you can see that I moved from consumer advocacy, I never chose this or expected it. Suddenly I found myself, I think, in one of the most important issues, if not the most important issue, facing our times, and that is this question I'd like to pose.
Well, it really is a life or death issue.
Absolutely. And the question I'd like to pose for your audience to ponder is this. Does life have absolute inherent value simply and merely because it's human?
Yes.
That's the sanctity of life ethic. We don't look at a human being and judge, oh, well, that person's retarded, or that person's got a disability, or that person's black, or that person's elderly, and say they have less value than someone else. We say every human has equal inherent moral worth, and you cannot put a measure on the value of each individual human life. That is the foundation of the American country. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, among which are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And of course, since that was written by Thomas Jefferson in 1776, we have come to understand that we cannot just mean white property owners, but also women and minorities and so forth. Everybody. There's no such thing as them. There's only us. Now,
well,
if we answer yes to the question I posed, then we can move forward with high-tech medical research and trying to deal with the difficulties of access to health care and so forth from a moral place. But if we say no to the question I posed, if we say no, life does not have ultimate inherent value simply and merely because it's human, which is what's happened in bioethics, which is what's happened in the assisted suicide movement, which is what's happened in animal liberation, then we have to ask ourselves another question. Well, what is it then, if it's not being human, that gives life value? And increasingly what we are being told in bioethics is it's the quality of life, which is how Terri Schiavo gets in the trouble she's in.
Right.
The animal liberation movement says it's the ability to feel pain, and if a being can feel pain, then a being is equal. Well, that means, and I've had very bright students, I go to universities and I go into high school honors classes to speak, I've had very bright students come up to me and say, you're saying that a bunny rabbit has less value than a human. And I'll say, yes. And very earnestly, they'll say, oh, no. No, we're equal because both of us feel pain. Well, if we're equal to animals, I submit, we're not going to end up treating animals better. We're going to end animals like people. We're going to end up treating people like animals. At least some people.
Right.
And the people who are going to be first victimized are people like Terri Schiavo, who people like Peter Singer have said, don't use chimpanzees or dogs in medical experiments. Use people like Terri.
Right, sure, of course, yeah, absolutely. Well, I tell you
and
what.
And you begin to talk about using, when you say no to the question I posed, you start treating some human beings as a mere natural resource.
That's right. You'll treat them like things and like animals and
exactly.
Like plants, ultimately. And
that's why the sanctity of life ethic is so important. It protects the rights of each and every one of us. It protects our inherent equality. We are brothers and sisters, flesh of flesh and blood of blood. And if we don't, was it Ben Franklin that said, either we hang together or we will surely hang separately?
I'm afraid so. Well, we'd better let people know again where they can get your book. It's been a while since we said it went through that 800 number.
Forced Exit, which deals with most of these, not the animal issues, but many of the other issues we've addressed tonight.
Right.
Can be bought half price from Spence Publishing at spencepublishing.com. And the phone number to get it at half price is 888-773-6782. And again, for helping poor Terri Schiavo, Governor Jeb Bush. The fax number for Governor Bush is 850-487-2564. And his phone number is 850-487-1963. And if you go to terrisfight.org, you will find links. So you can email Governor Bush and you can help the family and do your part to try to save this one fellow citizens, a sister's help, the help of sister, to help save her life.
Well, you know, September 11th is not far away, and
next
I think
week.
Dr. Stan's audience would be interested in setting up a phone chain, in effect, to call some of your friends, relatives, and so forth, and mobilize things for one life. We lost 3,000 on September 11th. We could fight for one life this September 11th.
We can, and you know, if we don't do anything, then, you know, I mean, we won't have killed her, but we won't have tried to lift a hand to help her either.
That's true. And, you know, it's nice that you're out there on the on this particular barricade, and you said a number of things tonight that I wasn't really aware of, and I expect our audience is in a similar vote. So,
well, it's up to them now.
Now they
well,
know.
All we can do is, and that's why you have this show, and that's why Dr. Monteith invited me on. In fact, I've been on several times now, and I'm honored by that. I mean, let people know what's happening.
Well, that's right. Dr. Stan is manning the ramparts about 5 hours a day.
Yeah, I mean, I assume that you have a loyal listenership, and they want to know what's happening, and then they should tell their friends.
And the internationaltaskforce.org that you mentioned, which
yes.
has the...
internationaltaskforce.org, and look for the PMDD, the Protective Medical Decision Document, and they can be reached toll-free Monday through Friday, business hours, East Coast time, at 800-958-5678.
All right. Good. All right. And if people, is there any email or other resource where people can reach you?
Well, if they want to go to my website, I apologize in advance. It's extremely rudimentary. I just right now have links to my articles. It's www.wesleyjsmith.com. www.wesleyjsmith.com. And somebody is contributing, which I really appreciate, to make my website more professional, because right now it's pretty poor. But that's the better-looking website isn't up yet.
Well, that will come, and I'm sure that people will want to relate to you, and will look for your book.
Well, I've got my email address on there, and if people would like to email, I'd love to hear from them.
All right. Well, that's good. Well, we appreciate your information. We appreciate your fight for people that may not be able to fight for themselves. I would say that at least get in touch with the Schindler family, get in touch with
yeah, these people
judges.
Need our help. They need our help. And if we
and
were in their situation, we'd want them to help us.
We would ask, and hopefully people would give. So, and Dr. Stan's audience is a very good-hearted audience, so I'm sure we've done some good here, and thank you very much.
I hope Dr. Stan gets his voice back soon. I hope he feels better.
Well, thank you. I do, too.
Yeah, good talking to you, Myrna.
Okay, Dr. Stan, you
Myrna,
take care of the voice.
Now, Myrna, you hang on, because Mr. Chapman will be on for the next hour. So
okay, excellent.
You hang right on.
I'll hang right on.
Thank you both.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Touch of laryngitis tonight, so I'm trying to fill his chair, which is a pretty hairy chair to fill. He's one of the great gentlemen of the world. Fortunately, he's well other than the voice, and he's doing our engineering, but his voice is a little scratchy at the moment. Meanwhile, we have his guest, Bob Chapman, on the line, I believe, who will talk to us about some financial matters. Mr. Chapman, are you there? And maybe a little early. All right.
Mr. Chapman?
Yes, hello, Mr. Chapman. Oh, I'm calling all Chapmans. Well, while we're at it, let me give you Dr. Stan's organization's phone number, which is 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. My name is Myrna Cobra. Some of you may know me as a frequent guest of Dr. Stan's and a sometime guest host when he needs to take a break or be out of town or the laryngitis strikes. And so we'll try to fill his seat. If some of you know the call-in number and you'd like to take advantage of a couple minutes to call in, please do so. Meanwhile, I believe we'll have Mr. Chapman on the line shortly. And we were just on a different line a few minutes ago with a gentleman who is talking about a case in Florida where a young woman is about to be basically sentenced to death by a judge for the crime of being in a hospital and having a nasty husband. Her name is Terry Schiavo. Her site is terrysite.org. And we've just had on another case some information about her. On September 11th, a hearing is being held. The judge has already indicated he's going to have her dehydrated to death, as our previous guest put it. If you'd like to weigh in on that and email or fax Jeb Bush in Florida, he has already tried to intervene, but he needs to take an official position on it. The number is 850-487-2564, just to give you a thumbnail heads up on that if you were not listening on another hour. Do we have our guest now?
Yes, I hope we have Bob. Bob, are you there?
Yes, Bob Chapman here.
Go ahead.
Hi.
Go ahead, Bob.
Okay, go. How do you do, Mr. Chapman? This is Myrna Culbreth. I'm sitting in for Dr. Monteith tonight while he has a touch of laryngitis. And I'm going to let you introduce yourself a little bit. I know you talk on financial topics. Tell us what's on your mind tonight, a little bit of your background.
Well, my background is that I've been involved in the financial markets for 43 years. I own my own brokerage firm. I was a stockbroker for 28 years. I retired, and I couldn't stand that. And so I began writing more intensely than I had previously.
Right.
And I have a publication called The International Forecaster, which covers business, finance, economics, and social and political issues. And even topics like the one you just mentioned about this woman and the problems that she's having. I run information also on medical matters as it pertains to the general population and the drug companies and things like that.
Right. And so how did you become involved? I mean, you retired, you couldn't stand that, I understand. What leads you to publish the, is this a newsletter or how do people access that if they want your international forecaster?
Bob?
Yeah, how would they, have we lost him?
Bob, are you there?
Hello, Bob.
Bob Chapman, are you there?
Well, maybe yes. We've lost.
Bob, Bob, go ahead, will you please?
Hello, Bob?
Yes.
Oh, hi. Okay,
I'm here.
You for a minute.
Please go ahead and just explain how they can get in touch with you and get your newsletter and what they're going to see in it.
Okay. They can reach to get a complimentary copy of the newsletter at 877-479-8178.
Okay.
And I'll repeat that, 877-479-8178. And if they'd like to email, they can email international_forecaster@yahoo.com.
Okay, international.
That's international_forecaster@yahoo.com.
Okay. All right, well, that's good. Tell us a couple of things that have been on your mind lately. What topics are you, let's say they want a complimentary copy of the newsletter, what would they be receiving?
Well, the email version of the newspaper runs 30 to 50 pages a week, And we also publish twice a month in hard copy, so people have the option. It's easy to get it by email for those who have it. And it costs $99.95 a year, and we publish 48 times a year. And so they get quite a bit of information. Presently, the subjects that are very important and have been for some time, but are starting to come to the fore even more so. We saw the collapse of the stock market, and over the past year it's rallied back from approximately 7,600 to about 9,500. And the main reason for the rally back is the propaganda machine in Washington, as well as the manipulation of the stock market by something called the Plunge Protection Team. And that is a euphemism for the financial markets and how they pertain to the United States government. And we've just recently seen a very large increase quickly in interest rates, not those which are set by the Fed, but the real rates which are in the marketplace. And we saw the benchmark 10-year treasury note go from a yield of 5.03%, up to 4 5/8, which is quite a climb. And that means that mortgages have gone up about 1.25%, 1.375%. And I believe that interest rates are going to continue to grow higher as U.S. Budget deficits go higher, the current account balance goes higher, current account deficit goes higher, and all of the myriad problems that the government's involved in, which includes the occupation of Iraq, which is going to be a very long-term, very expensive proposition, and the animosity it's generated among other countries toward the United States, perhaps with the exception of Great Britain. And I think that in the next 2 to 3 years that the real estate market is going to start to come unglued. In fact, I think it's already begun. And once that happens, then the stock market will go down and they won't be able to hold it up. And that will bring on the repudiation of debt from all sides. And as most people in the public sphere know, that corporate, personal, and governmental debt are preposterous. And I think it could very well bring about a depression. And so what I recommend to people is to generally stay out of the stock market, have limited holdings in treasury-insured protective securities, which are called TIPS.
Treasury-insured protective securities?
Yeah, treasury-insured protective securities, better known as TIPS. You can be bought at the bank. You don't have to go through a broker. You're limited to $30,000 per person. And I recommend gold and silver coins highly, and gold and silver stocks. The coins, I personally like a mixture of bullion and collector coins. With the gold stocks, on the New York Stock Exchange. And
gold stocks, that's where you cut out for a couple of words, so you were saying gold stocks.
I will repeat that, gold stocks. And the recommendation is Agnico Eagle, A-G-N-I-C-O, Eagle. And the symbol is AEM on the New York Stock Exchange. And Crystallex, C-R-Y-S-T-A-L-L-E-X. And that's on the American Stock Exchange, and that symbol is K-R-Y. And I consider Agnico Eagle a blue chip, and I consider Crystallex perhaps a budding blue chip. And they're both very good companies, and I have others, but two is enough for now. People can always email and ask me my ideas, and I give them freely. I answer every email, and I don't take phone calls because it gets just too overwhelming.
I understand.
But I will answer the emails because it's simple.
So they can email you at that email that you gave before?
Yeah, international_forecaster@yahoo.com.
Right. It did seem a rather sudden rise in interest rates. What happened there exactly, would you say?
There's two reasons. Number one, the Federal Reserve's announced position is that they're going to flood the world with money in order to keep a depression from our doorstep. And they've been creating approximately $1 trillion a year in fiat money through the credit system as well as in the creation of dollars themselves. That figure will go over $1 trillion this year. So the other reason is that a lot of long-term bond players were using derivatives, and derivatives are insurance, and some of them were writing the derivative contracts, others were buying them, and it created a real clash of holdings, which added to the fuel that sent interest rates up. And that's going to continue because there's 1.5 trillion derivatives, a trillion dollars worth of derivatives, and about perhaps 60% of them are what they call swaps. And very simply, what people do is buy bonds and they might sell the yield and keep the bond or vice versa. And that's how they do that. And it's very dangerous, even for professionals, because the mathematics on which they're based, the mathematics of probability, and there's some bounds that they have to stay within as far as volatility in the price of the bond is concerned, or the price of the instrument is concerned, bonds in this case. And when volatility gets wild, they can't control them. And so they get bought in, and that's what causes jumps in the yields or prices of things.
Huh, very interesting. If somebody is out there just in the ordinary day-to-day world and they're thinking of buying a house, they're trying to protect their assets, what should they do? Let's say you're thinking the real estate market is about to go south. What should somebody do if they were thinking of buying a house?
Well, first of all, with higher interest rates, less people are going to qualify. And sadly enough, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, who hold about 72 to 75% of the mortgages, 40% of those mortgages written in the last 4 years are subprime. These are people who have rented an apartment for 2 years and paid their rent, irrespective of their income, and they can make their mark on the bottom line of the contract. That's how bad the credit is.
Oh, boy.
And so you have a pyramid of pricing, and underneath you have a rotten core, because there are people moving into homes who just simply shouldn't have them. Now, people who are contemplating homes should also contemplate continuing to rent, because rents have been suppressed and rents have not moved up as the price of real estate has. So running is still a good proposition.
The rents have been cheapened relative to the home market. Is that
exactly
what you're saying?
Yes. Now, what's very important, the most important thing I'll say tonight to people out there is please get out of debt as much as humanly possible. I know that you get a big tax break when you hold a mortgage and pay interest on a house. You have to have a place to live, so you're going to continue to do that. But all that residual debt, the debt that's caused by the use of credit cards and revolving credit, etc., you got to do away with it.
Would it pay people along those lines if they still have an opportunity to refinance and pay off credit cards to do that or not?
Yes, that's a good thing to do. And the reason why is the interest at which you pay on credit card debt is not tax deductible.
Right.
The interest that you pay on a mortgage is. So there's an added advantage. So if you bought a house for $150,000 and it's now worth $250,000 and your credit card debt is $50,000, what you might do is take $50,000 out of the equity in your house, so like rewriting your mortgage, and take that money and do away with the credit card debt, which you're probably paying anywhere between 10 and 22% on.
Right, and, you could be paying $10,000 a year interest if you're at 20% on a $50,000 debt.
That's right. Yeah, on the credit card. So that's what it'll save you. And it's very important, very, very important, because if the economy gets worse and, you know, there's more unemployment, unemployment's 13%, it's not 6.2%. The government lies about every single figure that they release.
Unemployment is 13%?
That's right.
Wow.
And I think it's going to double from there.
It's going to go to 26%?
So if you don't, about 25, maybe 30. I think this could be much worse than the 1930s, and the reason why is that there was relatively little debt in the 1930s.
That's true. Most people were pretty much on a cash basis.
That's right. And
they had some money in the
bank.
So
this time, this time, you know, if you have a lot of equity in your home, and let's say it's worth $250,000, and let's say it drops 30%, you might be able to live with it pretty easily if you can retain your job. But if you have residual debt, it's a nightmare. And so you've got to get out of debt, and you've got to concentrate on keeping your job, saving money if possible, buying gold and silver coins and shares. For those who are more wealthy, they can buy some tips. Those people can also, who have more money, can also buy euro bonds, which I think are a good buy in here, because the euro is now trading around 108, down from 119. And I think it's a decent buy-in here. There's far more sophisticated things you can do, but I can't get into them on the program because it's just too difficult. I discuss them in the publication.
Right.
I make them real simple.
So people should basically get all the cash together that they can, pay off debt, refinance the property if possible to pay off any of those kinds of debts. What about refinancing? Let's say they're not heavily in credit card debt. Should they nonetheless take some cash out of the property to hold if they can?
I think that's a good idea, and they can take that money and put it into other instruments, giving them some diversification, such as, again, gold and silver coins and shares or tips. It gives them also something that is essentially cash. It can be converted into cash if needed. If they get laid off and they, let's say they spend $50,000 investing in the gold area, and let's say it was worth $100,000, and let's assume that both parties, husband and wife, lost their jobs, they might be able to hold on to their house for 2 or 3 years.
So a coin a month, right, yes.
And so that's very important. And I think that the gold should be selling now, somewhere in the $600, $700, $800 per ounce area. And I think the stock market should be trading at.
We may have lost a word or two there. Trading at.
Yeah, on the Dow, it's trading. It should be trading at 4,500. It's trading presently 2,500 because of the intervention in the markets by the United States government. And institutions, foundations, mutual funds, hedge funds. These people work together behind the scenes.
So everybody who making the stock market look good is doing the best they can to make it look good. Is that it?
That's right. And, you know, I can understand why Wall Street and our government would want to paint a positive picture. if the positives were really there, but they're not. Those positives are not there. We are in a terrible, terrible financial shape, and we've got just two countries, China and Japan, holding approximately $750 billion worth of our treasury paper. And we had our Secretary of the Treasury go to China this week and tell the Chinese that they should revalue, in other words, increase the value of their currency, which is called two things, either the yuan or the renminbi, depending upon what you want to use.
Uh-huh.
And he got nowhere because the Chinese have got us in a very bad spot. And one of the reasons they continue free trade and globalization, which is a disaster for the United States, is because the goods coming in from China are cheap and they keep inflation down. And we've lost, just in the last 3 years, 2.7 million jobs. And those are government figures, which I don't believe. I think it's more like 4 million. And most of the jobs that were lost over the last 15 years were in manufacturing through free trade.
Right.
And now they're starting to cut into the services industry and the professions. And we see PhDs in India making $12,000 a year, and the PhD here that was making $120,000 to $150,000 a year is out of a job, and he's down working in the supermarket, bagging groceries.
Right, flipping burgers and at McDonald's. Well, I have noted
exactly
that, too, from my perspective. I'm the author of The Phonics Game and Phonicsopoly. It's clear that we are importing brains into this country, and sometimes we're even not importing them physically, but shipping the job, as you're saying, to India, where somebody may earn a few thousand dollars a year for what would be large money over here. We're shipping out telemarketing jobs and customer service jobs and typing jobs to Ireland because our people can't read well enough is one of the items that's influencing that, among others.
Well, ever since 1928 and Deweyism in California, the educational system in the United States has gone straight down.
Yeah.
I talk to people who have degrees today. They really don't know a lot. And they have to be totally retrained in the area in which they're going to go and work. And so who ends up really teaching them is a company that they go to work for.
I've said that too. The employers have become the educators of last resort.
Yeah, that's true. And the situation is getting worse. The universities graduate people simply because they sit there. You have tuition going crazy.
Yes.
I mean, just this past year, you had an increase in private schools of 5.8%, and in public schools of 7.5% in tuition just in 1 year. And I know I wrote an article about that today, and when I went to school, which was in university in the early 1950s, I paid $1,200 a year. And the school that I went to, which was Northeastern University, is now up on the $16,000-$17,000 level. And that just shows you what the cost of education is.
Well, that's right, and it's getting worse and worse. And one of the big reasons, of course, is, as you said, between John Dewey and his cohorts, first of all, they undermined reading by putting in the whole word reading method. Just about in 1929, the Run, Jane, Run books came out. And since then, it's reading has basically gone to the usual location in a handbasket. One out of five really can't read. One out of two can't read a newspaper. And beyond that, I deal with a lot of professionals like you're talking about who, A, they can't spell, B, they get sleepy or tired or bored when they read, and C, their professional education isn't much good either.
We have Nathan on the line.
Okay, if we have a caller, Lisa.
I wanted to ask Bob.
Oh, sure.
How many jobs we've lost altogether over the last 10 years or so?
Well, probably something in the order of 10 to 12 million.
All right, fine. Let's go to Nathan.
Yes, hello.
There's Nathan. Go ahead.
Nathan. Hello,
oh,
Nathan. All right, go ahead, Nathan.
I hear a touch of laryngitis.
Yes, poor Poor Dr. Stan. Pretty bad when a man who talks 5 hours a day can't talk.
Oh, wow. I complain when I get it. Yeah, you know, you touched on a strange hot-button subject of mine, this concept of people in higher education who... I don't quite understand what's going on here. There's a very disturbing phenomenon I've noticed in higher education of perfectly well-educated, reasonable people with fundamental gaps in their knowledge. I've been noticing this more recently. I did not really notice this 10 years ago, to my knowledge.
Well, it's probably getting worse each decade in my experience, but perhaps Mr. Chapman has a viewpoint on that, too.
Well, just to give you a comparison, my daughter went to school for 3 years in Switzerland from the time she was 12 to 15 years old. And she came back, and she was a sophomore in high school. And the first school that she went to said they couldn't teach her anything because she had all the courses for high school. So she worked in the office in that school for a year. And she went to another school, and the same thing happened. And so she spent 3 years working in the office of two high schools, one in Canada and one in the United States. She was probably 4 years ahead of the children here. She eventually went to a university, and she graduated in 3 years with a 3.7 with two majors, one in French with a teaching certificate for university, and the other in international relations.
Right.
And the major reason why, and she always went to private schools, but the major reason why is in public schools, you're just not teaching the children what they need to know.
Well, they have shifted away from an emphasis on A, real reading, B, real content. And to reinforce Nathan's point, I recently tested a man who's an engineer, and he tested on a 4.5 grade level on can you read this word off the page. He knew he was bad. He didn't know he was quite that bad. And I was consoling him a little bit that some years ago I had in our face-to-face euphonics courses a man who was either A lead designer or even D lead designer in the San Onofre nuclear plant. And he said, I'm taking this course because I can't make the drawings. I could make them better than anybody else. I can't make them. I let my assistant make them because I can't spell to label the parts on the drawings. So I let my assistant make it. I hope I catch his mistakes. I'm saying I hope so, too. I don't live that far from San Onofre. So I was telling this to the more recent engineer, James, and he said, well, I'll go you one better. And the nuclear designer had scored on a 5.4 grade level on that same reading test, which is just words in a list. Can you read the word off the page? He couldn't read words like contemporary, alcove, eliminate. So I was telling this to James, and James said, well, I'll go you one better. I just scored on a fourth grade level on that test, and I can crank up. I know how to crank up a nuclear power plant. So it's out there, strange and awful deficits in learning. And James is not a stupid guy. He's a very bright guy, but he could not get through a piece of reading without getting desperately tired. Can't spell. Now he can. He's played 3 games of phonics awfully. He's fine. He's reading things cover to cover. Sounds like our music is coming up. We'll take a little break, and we'll be right back. Quite sure whether we're getting commercial break or not, but if we're not,
Go right ahead.
Okay, Dr. Stan, yes. What do you think is causing some of these things that you've been describing, Bob Chapman? What's behind all of this? Who's pushing the buttons? Who's at the steering switch of this, if anybody?
Well, it's a group of people internationally who want to create world government. My background and stance is somewhat similar, and I belonged to the Birch Society during the 1960s, and I was a section and chapter leader, and so I got a pretty good grounding in the people who are trying to create world government. And in the process, they have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people who work at their behest. They tell them what to do, what areas to go into. And they are manipulating many, many areas of our life. Education is one. The dumbing down of the American. That's part of taking the financial, economic, industrial, and war-making capabilities away from the United States so that they will no longer be a major power. That would bring a great leveling in the ability of countries to be number one, if you may, instead of the United States. Immigration, illegal immigration. There's 12 million illegal people here right now, and that's something that they have allowed to be created, which is very disruptive of our society and extremely expensive. And of course, all these people who come across the border are felons, and we now give them driver's licenses and bank accounts and make them virtually titular citizens.
Today, just today in California, they passed the driver's license for aliens, which Davis either has signed or will sign.
That's true, and there are other states who have previously done so. And but there was legislation passed in California that was never sent to the Supreme Court. And I think it may be in the future, and if it is, it covers a lot of different things pertaining to illegal aliens in the United States. But that's another prong of what they're doing, and there's many, many prongs of what they're doing. And so we talked about education, illegal immigration, the push towards one world government, which is being expedited by free trade and globalization. And if you take many, many jobs away from Americans, and then if many, many of them are good jobs, then we can't pay taxes because we're not making as much money or not working, and that means that the budget deficit gets larger and larger, and it means we go bankrupt, and the dollar goes down the tube, so to speak, and the next thing that happens is that we have a financial catastrophe, which we're fast heading towards, because these people behind the scenes at the Council on Foreign Relations and the Trilateral Commission and at the Bilderbergers and there's many, many other groups that meet secretly. These people want world government. They want to control us. They don't want America to be as powerful and as successful as it has been in the past. In order to do that, they're going to have to take away our guns. And that's going to be pretty difficult because there's about 400,000, excuse me, there's about, the figure escapes me, but there's a lot of guns in the United States.
Yeah, just and about one per person or even two, I think, something on that order.
Yeah, well, that would, I think it's two, but you put it up above 400 million.
Right.
And about 50% of them, there's no registration on them. They can't trace them.
Right.
And they're real concerned about that because Americans are the kind of people, as opposed to other countries, for the most part, that if they're in the streets, they got no food, they got no job, they're going to get pretty nasty. And they got to go after the people who have created this. So the people in the CFR and in these other organizations, the conspirators, the people behind things, they are really terrified because they know if they make one mistake, they're all dead. So what you're seeing right now could be a very, very enormous cataclysmic event over the next 10 years. and maybe sooner in a smaller period of time. And it's going to bring about enormous changes, and one of them is going to be a financial collapse, because it's inevitable, because these people have planned it that way.
Do you think that, for example, Greenspan and the Fed and so forth are a part of that, or what is the story with...
Oh, yes, they're a part of that. The Fed is probably the most powerful instrument that the elitists have, and it runs our country.
What do you think that citizens or individuals could do? I mean, you've already named a few things they could do to try to protect themselves. What else could they do to try to head this off, alleviate it, change it?
Well, the political system is very, very corrupt in both parties. But there are some good people out there, unfortunately only a handful, and you want to help them as much as you can. You want to try to get people elected who are interested in America and America's in its strengths and in keeping jobs and developing our culture and our school systems and everything that's needed to allow us to continue to be a strong nation. And if you don't have them running, well, maybe you want to run yourself, or maybe you know somebody who should run for office. And that's really all they can do except try to inform other people about the kind of things that we talk about on this program. And I know that for every 100 people I talk to want to listen, but that's okay. I've been doing this for 43 years, and I talk to probably a couple of hundred people a week. And if one person learns what's going on, then that week's been successful.
Well, sometimes one is enough, you know. One person can move the world, can change something, can steer something another way, can save their own family, can teach somebody to read, including themselves, or get, you know, that happens to be one of my hot buttons as the author of the Phonics Game and Phonicsopoly, but it pervades the society. We're now shipping all kinds of jobs. Either we're shipping foreigners in to keep our high-tech industry going, that's somewhere on the order of 250,000 people a year, or we're shipping the jobs out, as you said, to India, a great many technical jobs now, according to a number of recent articles that I've read, are going to India for the reason you named. You can get a PhD for pennies, and over here it's going to cost you a PhD salary. If you don't want to pay it, your PhD winds up washing dishes.
I get letters every day from people who are either subscribers, and we have subscribers all over the world, or know of people who are friends, particularly here in the United States, but now in Europe it's starting, that have lost a very, very good job, and they're training their Indian or Filipino or Mexican counterpart to do their job, and it's very emotionally debilitating, never mind the fact they're going to lose your job, to be having to, in order to hold on to what they can, having to train the person that's going to take their job away and that's going to be paid 25% of what they're being paid.
And, sort of adding insult to injury.
Exactly. And we're not going to have an America left with another couple of years of that. And I'm very fearful. And if things continue to go on the way they are, that there could well be revolution in the United States, just for economic reasons. And that would be very, very chaotic. And that's why they have used the subterfuge of terrorism in order to pass legislation such as the Patriot Act, and there's another one pending, Patriot 2, and also to implement Homeland Security, which I call Fatherland Security, because it's based upon the Nazi concept of fascism and control of the masses by a Gestapo. And that's what our government's doing.
Well, that's pretty alarming language. How do you see them implementing that? You see it.
They're already doing it. Anything that you do now, they can make it into a crime if they want to. you can't have anything to do with policing organizations, because if there's some reason they want to put you away or put you down, they're going to do it. And so the control of law and order in our country today is at a federal level, and it's controlled by the people who want to change America and bring us into a world government. And anybody who speaks out like myself in the manner which I do has got a problem. And
how do you deal with that on a personal level? How do you A, summon up the courage, and B, tough it out?
Well, for years and years I toughed it out, but sometimes you have to become incognito. And when you're a professional like myself, you have to be very, very careful, and you have to be one step ahead of them. And I have been just that, and I will continue to be so. But most people, what happens to them is they'll send the IRS after them, or they'll, you know, come in and search the house without a warrant, which you can do now and say,
is that under
cooking some people?
Searching without a warrant, are we talking the drug war, allegedly, or Patriot Act? Or what?
Well, it's not a war. It's a planting of drugs by our policing organizations in order to get you put in jail to shut you up.
Or
if you're in the securities industry, they send the SEC after you. They don't need to have any charges. They just make them up. You don't have any rights in the United States anymore. Anybody that thinks that they do is sadly mistaken.
That's pretty alarming language, too. What do you think people
should
do?
Well, you should read my publication, and if your hair is not already white, it will be.
Well, that's probably...
You sound too young to have white hair.
Well, not quite white, but I imagine your information could turn it that way overnight. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yes, I'm here. I was just saying, go ahead.
Some people...
You might be cutting out a word or two.
Oh, you were going to say something, some people?
Yeah, I heard some people, but then I didn't hear anything after that.
Oh, well, I think, you know, the best thing to do, again, is to get your house in order financially. And don't take your news off television. Hopefully you'll have a computer and go into the Internet. There's so many sites on there where... you can pick up all kinds of information, particularly information of the type that I'm telling you about.
What kind of sites do you recommend besides your own? First of all, repeat your own.
I don't have a site.
You have a...
And one of the reasons for that is the pursuit by the government.
I see.
And I receive in research. I have researchers. And I don't go to the sites myself. I have the researchers go. And I will get about 300 emails a day that I go through. Plus, I subscribe to, I think it's over 30 newspapers and magazines throughout the world in several languages, which I speak. And so we get a pretty good look of what's going on out there in Germany or Afghanistan, Kazakhstan, and so on and so forth. And so these are the kind of things you don't get on television. Everything is monitored, and they tell you what they want to tell you. And, of course, the elitists control the media. And so you have to go to alternative sources if you're going to find out what's going on. And that's why my newsletter exists, and there's only a few like it. Because most people don't like being thought of as a detriment to the government and those in power.
Well, I think a lot of Americans just have a general sense of goodwill and the fact that America has been here a long time, and they feel they're free, whether they really are or not, and so they may not be quite tuned in to what you're talking about, or at least not yet. On the other hand, a lot of people are uneasy, I believe, about a number of things that you've mentioned.
Well,
and I think a lot of people are uneasy about the stock market. I don't know if they have gone all the way to feeling as you feel about it, but I think people are not too thrilled about it, at least, and they're concerned.
Well, you have to remember, I was in the stock market as a professional for 28 years.
Right.
The average broker today lasts a year and a half. And so I've got a pretty good idea, being that I was one of the top professionals in that field.
Right. Well, that's an inside perspective that most people wouldn't have and don't know.
You know,
and there is a lot of turnover. I think a good bit of the financial industry these days is just young graduates right out of school who are churning accounts or trying to turn people from one stock to another to another.
Well, how about the people who run the major Wall Street firms who get fined $1.4 billion, $900 million, and on and on and on? And did you ever notice that they're never pursued by the SEC? It has to be some attorney general who goes after these people because they got a club there, and nobody gets prosecuted or persecuted. And then when they do, from an outside source, they pay a fine. Nobody in the brokerage community virtually ever goes to jail in major firms. They pick off these little guys in the small, medium-sized firms or some
right.
promoters because they're easy to pick off because they don't have the money to fight them.
Right. Or they post a wanted sign on Martha Stewart.
Martha Stewart. I mean, even if she was guilty, and I don't know whether she is or she isn't, they destroyed her, they destroyed her company, and they destroyed all those stockholders. Billions of dollars worth of stockholder equity was destroyed, and this woman's never gone to court.
No, and it was all rumor and innuendo. I don't have any idea whether she really did
horrible.
Wrong or not. But
she's already been tried in the media.
That's right.
It's dreadful.
Yeah.
And these are the kind of things I cover in the publication. It's very interesting. I cover stuff that nobody else covers. And,
it's one or two little items like that that you've covered that nobody else is surfacing.
I mean, the real inside story of, you know, what the import of what these people do. I mean, how can, you know, Merrill Lynch and J.P. Morgan Chase and Goldman Sachs, et cetera, how can they steal billions of dollars and pay a fine that's chump change to them? When some broker at XYZ Securities that's probably got 300 employees steps out of line one day and recommends a stock to a little old lady who maybe really shouldn't have it, they throw them out of the business, they fine them, they want to throw them in jail if possible. The whole thing is insanity.
Well, it appears they're not going after the big targets. It looks like nothing very much will happen to many of the high-profile fraud and accounting kinds of cases, Enron, up and down the line on that front.
They're all in
people.
They're all in the same club. That's why.
Yeah.
And this is the club that Stan and I have been talking about for over 40 years. And the people better get hep out there because these guys want to do you, your economy, your life, your children and grandchildren in. And they have war on command, perpetual war for perpetual peace. I mean, everything that brought us into Iraq we found is a lie. And yet the approximately 52% of the people think our president's doing a good job. You got to be kidding me.
Well, there's huge controversies on that front, and I know people have various viewpoints on it, but I think the perpetual war for perpetual peace phrase is pretty good one. Certainly there's... Go ahead.
That was originally by in a book by Henry Elmer Barnes in 1938.
Right.
Who was a revisionist historian. And it aptly fits today. The war was about geopolitical position, oil, or the theft of oil. and the security of maintaining the ability to ship oil to the United States, which imports 57% of their oil. And incidentally, they're running out of natural gas. And sure, we went in and took the place very quickly. I mean, they had a third world military. Might have been a lot of people, but they didn't have the weapons and the training. And now we're in there, and we've lost more people than we did in the invasion. And the invasion reasons were all lies. And here we have our young people getting killed day after day for nothing. And it's going to cost hundreds of billions of dollars. And Halliburton and Bechtel and many other firms are in there making a fortune.
Do you think that that was part of the motivation?
Yeah, and of course, Carlyle Corporation, which is controlled also by the elitists, which is a private company. And I talk about all these things, the CFR meetings, the Bilderberger meetings. I predicted that there would be a so-called terrorist attack about 10 months before it happened, and I predicted it within 33 days.
Interesting. How did you do that? I'm not sure if you heard me. What led you to make that prediction? And we might have a hitch in the phone line. Anyway, we're coming up toward the top of the hour.
I guess information. The popular government.
Okay, we're having a little bit of technical difficulty there, but go ahead. I was asking how did you make that prediction?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now. But we probably missed a few words.
Well, I think what we should do, we're coming into closing here, and I'll give them the telephone number again so they can get a free copy of the International Forecaster.
That would be good, yes.
And that's 877-996-4327.
Say it again, because I think one has disappeared.
I have another 800 number that you can... that you can use also, which is 877-479-8178.
Okay, why don't you repeat both of those numbers?
Sure.
Once in a while.
The one I just gave you is 877-479-8178, and the previous one was 877-996-4327.
Okay, those were clear. And I'm sure you can call
and International Forecaster, which is international_forecaster@yahoo.com.
And I understand you're offering a free sample of your newsletter, which would be very nice. And I'm sure if people...
Either by email or surface mail.
Okay, your email is what?
Idea. Either email or surface mail.
Okay, what is your email again?
International_, which is a little mark along the line below what a dash would be for those who don't know.
Right.
That's international_forecaster, forecaster, at Yahoo, yahoo.com, com.
Good. And what is your surface mail?
They can just call, and
okay.
They'll have a copy sent out to them. They don't
All
have
right.
to worry That's about that.
Sure, and that sounds good. And I'm sure if you missed any of that, Dr. Stan's organization can also give it to you, and his number is 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. You can also get any of his materials, publications, sets of tapes, Phonixopoly if you like. And this is a good time to get it. Your kids may be coming home crying from school. In any case, I've enjoyed this conversation very much, Mr. Chapman, and I would urge people to get that free copy of your newsletter. In fact, I wouldn't mind one myself. I'll probably give you a call, too. And...
Okay.
If you have a final word, what would you say to people?
Without a debt. plain and simple.
Get out of debt.
Get out of debt, plain and simple, and try to find out more about what's going on so you can act appropriately to defend yourself financially, economically, your family, your friends. This is not going to be nice. It's going to be nasty, and it's already begun.
What kind of time frame do you see for things to get really difficult?
Well, it's hard to say because they can do anything they want at any time. They have an endless amount of money. And if they need it, they just print it. And so I would think that probably as when they want, before she's reelected. If they decide they want to reelected, then things will probably go sideways into the election, maybe slightly worse. And then after the election, it will be brutal. On the other hand, if they don't want to him elected, we might see some sort of calamity that was in lockdown, which in a week or two, or a day or two, or a month or two. There's no way to time it because we just don't know.
Well, that's a cheerful thought. Anywhere from tomorrow until further notice, I guess. What is your sense? Do you think that the people you're talking about would like to see Bush reelected or not?
That's hard for me to tell. I really can't say because they control both parties in general. And those they don't control, they pay out, so they do control. And so they do as they please. And so I don't know what direction they want to go in. Maybe they want Hillary in there. I mean, every country should have a queen.
Well, that's a pretty scary thought. Yeah, Queen Hillary.
It certainly is. And we'd have that pervert lurking around all the time. And, you know, these guys all belong to the same club, or these ladies, too. And, it's a shame, that most of the people we have to vote for are all part of the same elitist group of people who want to do us in.
Well, when Clinton was campaigning, he used to say, well, with Hillary, you get two for the price of one. Now, I assume she's going to say, well, probably not after all of this. She'll just quietly smuggle him in as the House husband, I guess, White House husband. Well, it's a rather alarming thought, but people are out there trying to do the best they can to make themselves secure. I'll be signing off in a minute. I've enjoyed meeting you on the air, and I hope Dr. Stan's voice is coming along. This is Myrna Culbreth, Radio Liberty, and Dr. Stan, you get the voice well and get some rest. And Don Chapman, thank you very much. International Forecaster, that's international_forecaster@yahoo.com, or the 800 numbers that he gave you, or 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for any of Dr. Stan's offerings.